From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the program. One thing that I've learned in 27 years, God, has it been 27 years of being a police officer? 5 years before that as an emergency medical technician, growing up with a father as a policeman, and doing this talk show for the last almost 12 years now, is that domestic violence is an epidemic. It's a problem in society, and the holiday time, I don't care what holiday you celebrate or what your background is a depressing time and brings out a lot of domestic violence. My next guest, Susan Murphy Milano, is a domestic violence expert. She's got a new book coming out soon called Time's Up, How to Escape Abusive and Stalking Relationships Guide. Suze is a good friend. She does her own show. There's a link in the show notes to her webpage. She hasn't been on the air for a little while, but she's coming back real soon, and it's always a pleasure to have her on. Welcome, ma'am.
Thank you, sir.
Nice to have you back on the air. I've missed you.
I missed me, too. a lot of people, I took some time off since September, and I'm back. It's sad that to try to catch up with all of these murder-suicides across the country, in Canada and in the U.S., where fathers and mothers, recently there was a case in California that a mother had come back from a court custody case. She is a lawyer, a prominent lawyer with a fairly large law firm, and had to remand custody to a relative in another state, and allegedly she returned home, shot the 2-year-old, the 4-year-old, her own mother, and then herself. Now, the ballistics aren't in yet. The gun was close to both people, and there was gunpowder residue on both hands.
Oh,
so,
God.
You know, it's, and I was afraid, in a way, to, you know, I only write about mostly men because that's who commit these crimes.
That's right, yeah.
I was intrigued by the amount of emails, private ones I received, some from that knew her and defended her actions because allegedly some things had happened to her in her childhood from her own father. And, you know, it's no excuse. The children were still murdered. She didn't protect them. And a man or a woman, it doesn't make it right and acceptable.
No, that's right. If you're just tuning in, Susan Murphy Milano is here, domestic violence expert, and we're going to talk about domestic violence this time of year. It's holiday season, and it's not just at this time of year, but it does peak, it does spike, and like Susan says, the stats don't lie, and I've lived the stats, and so has Susan. Men do commit most of these crimes. However, women are there too. Susan, when I talk about the holidays, it is a depressing time for a lot of people. It's a very difficult time for a lot of people. You know, I've had, it's going to be a tough time for me. I lived all my life with my father. This may be my first Christmas without him. And we have to get through that. We have to do things. And sadly, when those things come up, whether it's money, whether it's an alcohol problem, whether it's drugs, whether it's whatever, that can turn ugly, and all of a sudden you have a domestic violence problem.
You do, and I write also for the Time's Up blog, blogspot.com, which is strictly for victims of survivors of crimes or loss of a loved one. And as you know, you've had Sherry Simpson on the show. She's a contributor also to the blog. And I just wrote a letter to Sean. Sean is a 10-year-old boy who on November 28th, his parents had divorced. His father had come into a home a couple hundred miles away, and in front of him shot his 16-year-old sister, 14-year-old sister, and his mother, and his great-grandmother, and he escaped, you know, barely escaped. So I wrote this letter to Sean, and I said that, you know, it's very important, you know, what's going to happen. You know, the just like you, your first holiday, you know, there's going to be things that aren't going to feel right. There's going to be things, you know, you're going to be kind of subjected to do, like, you know, go to a gathering or, you know, remember that empty place.
Yep.
And it's difficult. And for a 10-year-old boy to get through that, he has to know, and there are many Seans out there, that he's going to get through this. Even for me, it's been close to the holidays where my own father killed my mother. And the holidays, as I'm away, I'm actually going to be doing the cooking because I said, you know, that's what I like to do every year. So it takes my mind away from it and people don't kind of bother me or ask me questions. Because you really do miss that person. That person, a lot of times for my mom, the holidays were the biggest time of year. But it's also for people that are depressed or have violent tendencies. They, I don't know if they use it as an excuse, but it kind of creeps up to them in such a way where they do become more violent, especially when their family members aren't around and they start acting out. They start, especially if you're divorcing in that year's time. I have a lot of people in the new book, Time's Up, we're doing what's called an evidentiary abuse affidavit. And on my trip, I've taken 40 videos with me of women who I don't know if something's going to happen to them this Christmas. We just finished doing them the last few months because they're afraid that something's going to happen. And it's a, like a last will and testament. If something happens to me, and the book outlines all that, what to do, how to do it, because you don't want to be, you know, when Stacey Peterson disappeared, and her body has still not been found, and that was in Bolingbrook, Illinois, in October of 2007.
Yeah.
And then prior to that, Drew Peterson's wife, number three, was found dead in a bathtub. On Stacy's murder or disappearance, you're not going to find her, possibly. So if she had done this evidentiary abuse affidavit, she, you know, there would be a record of it. It couldn't be, no one could dispute it. It would be her giving specific information, and, you know, he would have been arrested allegedly if he had taken her life. And again, it's allegedly because there's been no body, he's not been, you know, attached to the crime. So this is something that is a deterrent in a way, and I've seen that for these women who are in these situations, it gives them strength, it gives them hope. And you and I have spoken about this before too. It's about a plan B.
Yep. You know, and that's so important, and you have to have that plan B. And you know, and again, I encourage audience members, because I get emails too, if you're listening to this program and you know of someone who you may think is a victim of domestic violence, or you're living a situation of domestic violence, ask for help. There's all sorts of resources out there for you. Correct, Susan?
Oh, there are. There's, you know, if you go to www.ncadv.org, or the number is 1-800-799-SAFE. That's a national number. It's also, you can go online and look at that as well. And there's resources and things, but it's really important to know, too, that you're not alone, and that the resources that are available are kind of generic. They're to be retrofitted for you. So let's say that it says, you know, pack a bag. Well, maybe you just can't pack a bag and leave it in the living room hallway. Pack a bag and take it to someone's home where you can gain access to it. Don't leave anything around. You have to be the best actress you know how to be. You have to be 10 steps ahead of the abuser. You know, this has become so rampant, and in families, we're seeing more and more children being murdered just because of a divorce, just because of the breakup of the family. And again, the holidays really raise that level of safety for a lot of these women who think that they're safe. They move away. They don't have connections, or maybe perhaps they're going to a party. In California last year, we saw a man who, nine people he shot up, I don't recall his name, but he walked in on New Year or Christmas Eve, and killed everyone, and he had just divorced. It's about what these men think of is, you're not going to get away with it. Nobody leaves me with their life. I don't care if you're my children, you're my wife, you're my former wife. How dare you do that to me? And what they do then is take that anger, and you're seeing other innocent victims who are just happening to be in attendance someplace. They're the ones who also get hurt. So you can't, I call it the na-na-na-na-na thing.
Yeah.
That when they're free and safe, they come back kind of some, not all of them, but it's na-na-na-na-na, you can't get me, I'm free, I'm away.
Yep.
It's because they let down that safety net. So maybe they don't have the alarm system on at the house. Because it's the holidays or it's a birthday party. We've seen a lot of things in Florida this past year where during a birthday party, during a recent breakup of a marriage, he went in again and five people were killed.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens. So that's when you have to be the utmost careful, is when you've already left and you don't let people know what's going on. I got a call the other day from someone who's married to somebody in law enforcement and said, What do I need to do before the holidays? I said, you need to not have a party. If you have anything going on, you don't tell anybody. I said, this year, just chill. Everybody chill. Don't make a big deal of anything. Try to stay out of the person's way or take a vacation during this time. But don't get in the abuser's way. Don't, because if anything's going to set him off. I mean, he could stop for gas and, you know, something happened to his credit card, or you know, he'll find any excuse to say, I'm going to go. I'm just so mad at that son of a bitch.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't take anything, and it's not anything that the victim does. It's what the abuser chooses to select to decide that that's what he's going to use as his excuse to possibly create harm.
And one of the terms that you use, Susan, you're not alone, I think is so important for the victims to realize and to understand. In fact, you should use that title for your next book. Susan Murphy Milano is here. We're talking domestic violence and focusing on this time of the year and some prevention tips and things. And, you know, Susan, and you've seen the coverage too, and so have I. And if I see another comedian make a joke about Tiger Woods, I'm just going to puke, because there you have a situation, infidelity, allegedly, whatever you want to call it. It's not allegedly. All these women are coming out now. Obviously, there was a domestic violence situation, a vehicle accident, and the golf clubs, and all this sort of stuff. Luckily, nobody was killed. But you see the media now taking this situation, making fun of it, laughing at it. But it's not just Tiger Woods and his wife. It's couples all over the world that are going through this, North America in particular. And it's a big problem. Why do we see this when it comes to high-profile cases and people laughing at it?
Because it's a public figure. It's someone that we can poke fun at. It's somebody that has, in this case, this is a squeaky clean image. And really, it seemed to have caught the world off guard that no one knew he was having this many affairs or, you know, outside relationships of the marriage. What I found kind of disturbing, too, was the women that he was with. Now,
yeah.
They all were invited to the party with very engraved invitations from him, basically.
Yeah.
Some were paid, some were not. To come on national television and to talk about, like, I loved him so much, I cared for him, and yes, he knew my son, and you don't, what type of a person exposes their child to that then?
Yeah, exactly.
If you know that the person is married, if you know that they're in a relationship, that's a very delicate situation, and to invite someone in, it also shows that we forget, hypothetically, let's say that it was someone like Tiger Woods, and he had committed a murder.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had gone out and done these things, and then somebody tragically got hurt because of it. Or somebody, you know, one of the women's boyfriends got upset. You know, how would we look at it then? We've taken this as a joke, and yet violence against women or crimes within the home, if you think of this, Dana, these are perpetrators. They're not sexual perpetrators like we might think, like the man lurking with glasses next door, or the person who is our Boy Scout leader or our teacher. These people who live in the home, that when these crimes are committed regardless, are not often seen as suspects, or it's not a big deal because they're in the home.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods, to me, that whole thing was a joke. I wish that the national media would put just as much emphasis on violence in homes and
yep.
crimes when these crimes happen, and take that serious level of, you know, what are we going to do about it? Instead of making jokes about the nine iron and you know, Saturday Night Live. And
yeah.
That's all fun. That's all fine. But it has a double-edged sword that I don't think people really see.
No, it's right. And when you look at role models and all this sort of stuff, all of a sudden you've got a guy who has infidelity problems, so many girlfriends. And then you look at the other picture, and you mentioned it briefly, Susan. You look at the single mother with a child. You look at some of the backgrounds. You see, in their case, an opportunity to be with a celebrity, lots of money, lots of fame, lots of fortune, you know, use them, abuse them, and then throw them to the curb sort of thing. How do you deal with that? Because when you're in that situation as a single mother, you have problems money-wise, and then you see that golden opportunity that's out there. All of a sudden, the blinders come on, and you don't look at the big picture. As a counselor, as a domestic violence expert, how do you counsel someone to be prepared for those sorts of things?
I don't know that you can. I think that everybody wants to be loved. I just, somebody from L.A. who's a fairly well-known lawyer called me the other day and said, we have to deal with these celebrities' cases, the ones that you don't hear about, these people from these television shows that things are kept under wraps and it's not discussed. and where a lot of times out of the marriage of the celebrity and his wife, he's having babies.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know, or there's violence involved. Look at Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown.
Yeah, good example.
Whitney Houston just did recently, she did it a couple of days on Oprah Winfrey. She talked about it. You saw the fighting. Right, they were televising it right on Bobby Brown's show.
Yep.
And until I saw her on the interview, I didn't take it that seriously. I thought, well, she looked like she was on drugs or alcohol. And again, that's no excuse, but here she was, a very high-powered celebrity with someone who was also a celebrity, and they were filming it. And nobody called it what it was. They didn't call it domestic violence. To this day, the media doesn't call the Drew Peterson case with his wife in Illinois. They don't label it as a domestic violence.
Yeah.
You know, because he's kind of made a joke of it. He's kind of been a jokester out there on the whole thing. And no, I didn't kill my wife. I didn't do this. She left with a red bikini. Come on. It's kind of the same thing, only there's a lot more dollar zeros after somebody's name in their bank account.
And the media fed right into that, the Drew Petersons and the others that joked about it, because they saw something, they saw a clown like that come forward, make light of it, and myself included, you enable the Drew Petersons the people want to hear them, but when you bring that on and you allow them to do things like that, you enable them, and it doesn't bring out the whole picture. You need to...
Four children, Dana, are without mothers. Four.
Yep.
Two from each marriage. And two women are unaccounted for. They're erased from this earth, all because someone decides power and control. And it's very important, if we look at the Kathleen Savio case, it was about assets, it was about money, and it was about starting a new life.
Yep.
And that is becoming very common, where the person's getting a divorce, he doesn't want to keep paying the child support. Again, this is all alleged because, you know, he's not gone before a court of law yet and hasn't been tried by a jury. But it all plays into this. And the court gesture type behavior that took place for those 18 months, what a slap in the face to the children, to victims across the country. And it just fuels the abuser who says, well, I can do that. Look at, we have a case here, Susan Powell, who... December 8th, I believe it was, she went missing. It's 12:30 at night. He takes his little children, his two little kids, it's freezing out, and he takes them on a camping trip, and they can't find her body.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
You know, this got to stop.
No.
And also, in cases like that where, in this case, which you don't see a lot, the father defends the son-in-law, saying he's a good guy, leave him alone, he's not a suspect. Well, look at everything.
Mm-hmm.
She leaves her cell phone there. She leaves her purse there. It's 12:30 at night. She has to be at work the next morning. She's a stockbroker. And someone like that is not likely to tell other... And that day, earlier in the day, she has dinner with friends. She's not sick because he says she's sick. She wasn't feeling well. And someone like that is the least likely to tell anybody. They're part of the church. They go to church every week with their family. They're close with their family, but the one thing that they won't tell is the dirty little secret that they're being abused or their marriage is in trouble, or they can feel and sense that the vibration in the house has changed. It's turned around. He's acting strange. He's making you feel like there's salt, pepper on the table, and you go look for it, and you know it's always been there, but no, it's not.
Yeah.
Or that money disappears or items start disappearing from the house. You don't think of those things, but perhaps in Susan Powell's case, I haven't heard that they have located her body or missing remains, but police go in there, there's a fan going on, he comes back with the kids. Something happened, and I had wrote a blog about that, and I said, you know, they should have checked, you know, the boys right away when they had come back, because maybe they were given some NyQuil or something that would just put them right out, because they were so young.
Mm-hmm.
But what kind of father takes their kids out in the middle of the night like that?
Yeah.
Unless... they're doing something. And then to just say, mom's gone, that doesn't happen, Dana. You know that as a police officer.
Yeah. No, exactly. Susan Murphy Milano is here. We're talking domestic violence. This is the Dana Pritzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Susan. We're going to extend her segment tonight. We'll go till, I'm going to go another 20 minutes with Susan, because we got a lot to talk about her new book and talk about a lot more. Here on the Dana Pritzer Show, we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Tonight's author and domestic violence expert, Susan Murphy Milano, is here. We're talking about her new book, soon to be released, Time's Up. Check out her webpage by clicking on the link in the show notes. In fact, Susan does her own show on Blog Talk Radio, and you'll be returning to air January 13th, correct?
Yeah, at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and it's called Killing Me in the Courtroom, which we see so many of these women who get literally killed in the courtroom with, you know, they're fighting for custody, they're abuse victims, they don't have the funds to fight for a long period of time, and you're seeing many of them, you know, surrender basically their rights. I have somebody that called me today out in Kansas who says, after all these years, my child is 15 years old, I'm going to surrender my rights as a parent. I said, that's what you need to do, because it disarms them too. Then the person that's abusive, who had you, they want that fire, they want that fury, they want that in a courtroom. They want to keep making allegations that are not true. They want to make the woman, the parent, a nut, that she's on drugs, she's not capable. I've never said this before in your own show, and I've done one or two blogs on it myself, but I lost custody of my own child based on what I do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
They used the fact that my father had murdered my mother. They used the fact that I was helping people. They used the fact that I was, you know, possibly crazy because I was saving women from being killed and running a large agency at the time. And they used those things in my own life to say, I'm not a fit mother. Well, what does one have to do with the other? So I'm just one of millions of mothers without custody across the country who have lost or are losing their children because someone had the upper hand, someone set the stage to a play that it could have their own ending, and it's not truthful. And what you do when they can't get them one way, you see that maternal deprivation or the removal of a custody of a mother involves the killing of them physically in death or the killing of them in the court. And I can't tell you how many cases I have like that. And if people are listening, they can go to protectivemothersalliance.blogspot.com. It's a great site. They can join the support group there and try to get some information and some insight. But there aren't really any lawyers who do this. I have a case right now. It's going to court on Monday. It's a big trial. It's in Illinois in Will County. It's in courtroom 312 at 1 o'clock if people want to go. And this is the same courthouse that Drew Peterson's in.
Mm-hmm.
She's a police officer's wife. And the court system is, Judge Brob is doing things in this courtroom that he's getting away with it because there's not a court reporter, there's not the media there, she doesn't have the support. And this woman almost died for other reasons, but she's a battered woman. She's a victim. Her child was taken away. He's a 13-year veteran of a police department who's been able to get away with things. He's written poems and done things and told her what he's going to do to her if she doesn't go away. Go away, go out of my life. I'm going to kill you. If I can't kill you because we're not married anymore, I'm going to kill you another way in the courtroom.
Jeez.
You're seeing this over and over again.
That's just disgusting. Your new book, our good friend in common, Robin Sack, says it's a well-written guidebook that is a must-have for anyone who's a victim or who works with victims of domestic abuse. Murphy Milano speaks from expertise, passion, and knowledge. If you want the bottom line, state-of-the-art tips, and a strategy to leave, you must read this book before time runs out, and I think that's so important. When you use that term, killing them in the courtroom, I got to admit, the hair on the back of my neck stands up because I've been there, been in the courtrooms, and you see it happen. And that's something in our system, whether it's judges who have this Attila the Hun syndrome, to defense attorneys, to co-counsels, to whatever, who think that they can just do what they want, and that re-victimization, Susan, is just something that goes on and on and on.
It's like beating up a disabled person in a parking lot, and everybody's standing around and nobody calling the police.
Yep.
Or watching a rape happen and nobody going in to stop or doing anything, just being the bystander. And then they egg it on. You know, I remember not that long ago, I believe it was in California, a group of guys for several hours bang-ganged a young girl, a 15-year-old girl.
Yep.
And afterwards, I saw that, you know, one of the alleged people who were there, he could have taken his cell phone and used that. He could have gone down the street to call 911. They all just watched.
Yeah.
And they antagonized. It's the same thing in the courtroom. To me, the judge is, and I have great respect for judges, I'm not, but, you know, he's like, you know, the circus master.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, animals, here you go. There's my whip. I'm cracking it, which is the gavel. And you've got the court jesters, which are the lawyers.
Yeah.
Some of my best friends are lawyers. But in the domestic violence relations or family courts across the country, many lawyers will not take these cases. They will have side deals to get them done. And who loses? The children. The children lose. No one else. My son is lost.
Yeah.
Because of whatever, as an example of whatever has happened, he's lost to manipulation and misstated truths, all because I survived a horrific event of my father killing my mother, that I made it out, and I wasn't supposed to. So think of woman after woman who goes into court. A, she's not prepared, so maybe she served first, or, you know, and a lot of times she served first so that he gets the upper hand and says, you know, you're going to stay married to me, right? I'm going to show you what I can do to you if you don't fall in line and listen to me.
Right.
That's what he does. That's part of his strategy. Or he's done with her. Ah, screw you. I'm done. Like a piece of garbage, take out the trash.
Yeah.
I'm going to remove you as their mother. These people give these children life. They love them. And that is their only, it's their breath for these women. For my son, it was my breath. I would have done anything. And I didn't fight it because it was no use. And I just thought, you know, the best thing is for him to be here and I'll see him, and that's fine. And I had to play that and play it very carefully. Just recently I started to talk about it just a little bit. I never brought it up because I drive the domestic violence, stalking, murder, and safety bus. I don't drive the mothers without custody bus. But I tell you, I can't take what's coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I can't take these cases. And part of it is so that they know what. I have a book that I'm almost finished with called Holding My Hand Through Hell, which deals with this. And I didn't realize how much of the way I grew up or what I did. And all I wanted, and in each book I've written, Defending Our Lives, Moving Out, Moving On, and this new one, Time's Up, I say my son is always last in the acknowledgement. And I remember when he was very young and we were sitting on the floor baking Christmas cookies. It was the first year it was without him that I was his visiting mother. I gave birth to him.
Uh-huh.
He says, Mommy, why am I last in the credits? I said, because you're really first, yeah. And I want people to see that, and you're my only child. And it was because I wanted the world to be a better place and hoped that someday he would understand that. That, you know, whatever was going on, the evil was so great, as it is for these women across the country, too great for them to fight, that I had to make a decision. And I was in court for a lot of years. And then, you know, when I wasn't giving up. I had no choice. These women have no choice. They have no resources. And then my case as well, it's been sealed since 1993. And a few months ago, the seal was lifted because he's trying to start. He does this every time I have a book come out. He does. This is a manipulation. I'm not laughing. I'm just,
right.
I'm just appalled that every time I come out with something and do something, as do in other situations with these women, I'm going to ruin you. I'm going to ruin your career. I'm going to ruin your business.
Yeah.
I'm going to ruin your livelihood. That's what these offenders do. And, you know, women do marry people who are manipulative. They may not beat them, but they could beat them verbally. They could beat them, you know, with what's going on in the home in a different way. They don't have to use their fists.
No.
It's a tire track that you can't see.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of your new book, Time's Up, I'm going to cherry-pick from a couple of the chapters here just so we can discuss it, because I think it's important. And
well, you're the first to get it. No one's received it yet, so it doesn't come out till March.
Yeah.
You have the galley, the first one.
I know, and this is an encouragement for people to, when the book comes out, is to buy it, because I'm not going to read from it, and but I'm going to cherry-pick some of the titles from the chapters. And Chapter 2 says, Time's Up, Take Control. And I understand it because I've looked at it and I see where you're coming from this, but let's talk about that a bit.
Well, you have to take control of your environment. You know, I tease and say I've been married as many times as people change underwear in a week. I'm not proud of that, but I don't put up with a lot either. And you know, when the party's over, I don't need an engraved invitation to stay anymore. I need to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I was living in another state. And I had to realize that no matter what, it was time for me to move forward and on. And the environment that I was in was not good. So you have to take control no matter at what cost it is to yourself. You know, you can always start over. You can always find someone new. Even though at the time you're going through it, you don't feel that you can.
Right.
Taking control of your environment, of yourself, we're all people pleasers. There's so many people, men and women, who will do anything for their spouse or their girlfriend or their relationship. And sometimes we don't see the advantage that the other person who's manipulative and controlling is doing. We look at it possibly as love, what it is about power and control. And once we step out of the box and leave and say, I don't want any more, you know, you take everything, goodbye, they still come back at you. And you have to be very strong, stand on your own 2 feet, and say, I will take control of my life. I will, you know, and in the book, what's kind of neat about it is that you have to have a plan. It's not, okay, I'm going to leave. Well, what if the kids get sick the night before? What if the neighbor comes by and says, can I help you with something? Because they're going to help you move, but then they're going to call him.
Yep.
You know, that you have to be on guard all the time. You have to send people that you do business with, your cell phone company, your cable company, your credit cards. You have to do this ahead of time enough so that you can have the mail sent someplace else. A great resource, and people don't think about this, is the UPS boxes. You know, the brown trucks box, UPS,
yep.
Not United Postal Service, but the other.
Yep.
Is when you have an address, it gives you an apartment number. There was some well-known author that contacted me a couple of months ago. He said he Googled me and saw my address on the map. I kind of laughed because I thought, do you think I put my address someplace? He says, I'm concerned for your life and your safety. You do all this work. And your address, I found it on Google. I found it where you lived. And I emailed him back, and I said, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to tell him everything, but that is not a physical address. That's where someone accepts your mail. They sign for it.
Yep.
They take your mail in, and it shouldn't be that costly. It depends on what state you live in. But that way, if packages and things come that are related to your court matters, someone signs for it, especially if it's usually that stuff is sent certified mail or FedEx. You don't have to worry about missing it, or if you're working a lot of hours and trying to get your life back together, you have this UPS box that you have a key to 24/7. That means if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, well, it's closed, but what they do is they give you a key to the front door entrance. It's lit, and then you have a key to your mailbox. Just be careful when you go in and out.
Yeah, for sure. Susan Murphy Milano is here talking about her new book, Time's Up, and we've got about 3 more minutes with Susan, and I'm not going to let the whole book out. It comes out in March, but I love the titles of the chapters, and the one that I want to let you finish up with, Susan, is Chapter 6, No Time for Excuses. That is so important.
Yeah, if you think about it, I can't because I'm going to get a promotion. I can't because what will people think? I can't because, you know, I just don't have it in me. I'm going to stay. It's not so bad. I can't because it'll devastate everybody, and they just don't know what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
I can't because I can't.
Yeah.
And that, you don't have the time to make the excuses because time is not on your side anymore. And for those listening or those working with someone or going to church with someone or in your community, the most important thing is to never say that you're going to be leaving or you're going to have plans of leaving. Never announce it to the person you're in a relationship with, because you've then already given them the beginnings of they're going to start putting things in motion much quicker than you will. And they will have a plan to throw you off guard, to possibly hurt you, to you know, do harm to your children. So you can't talk about this. You really have to do this in, like if you were in a convent, you know,
mm-hmm.
You can't talk about it to anybody
right.
That you trust. You know, one or two people, but you have to be very careful. At work, when you're starting to make plans, you know, maybe you've emailed the person you're in the relationship with or married to, and they have your IP address, so maybe there's a way that they've hired or contracted a firm to see what your activity is on the computer, and they're monitoring you. You don't know it.
Yeah.
You don't. That's not the computer you use. You go somewhere else. You go to a computer at the library or some other remote station, perhaps at work or at church. Go to a church and ask them. And that's where you do all of your work to set up your plan and put it in place. You don't make excuses as to why you can't do it. The Internet is the doorbell to your safety. The Internet is the place where you can go, find support, find information. I don't care if you live on an island. If you have Internet, you have access, and you have access to safety. So that's no excuse either.
for sure. The book is Time's Up, Susan Murphy Milano. Make sure and check out her webpage. There's a link in the show notes. And she returns to Blog Talk Radio January 13th. Happy holidays to you, ma'am, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye, everybody. Happy holidays.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Susan Murphy Milano, always a great guest to have, especially, you know, at this time of year where domestic violence cases seem to spike. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with former Deputy DA from L.A. County. You know her, you love her, you can't live without her, Robin Sachs, with her weekly Nothing But the Sachs segment here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. I can never figure out why the PSA I run just before the segment always has to do with Smokey the Bear and preventing wildfires. I'm not sure what that has to do with my next guest, Robin Sachs, former DA, author, victims advocate, television analyst. Her weekly Sachs Facts feature can be found, linked to it on her webpage, robinsachs.com. Good evening, ma'am, and happy holidays to you.
And to you and to everyone on the Scared Monkey family.
What's going on?
You know, just a little bit of downtime here. Kind of actually enjoying the quiet life of crime for the last couple of days, actually.
The last couple of days. You know, some people go a month or two without doing much, and you are so busy that 2 days off for you must seem like a real treat.
It is. It is. It is definitely a treat. I'm, like, actually returning emails and calls and doing all kinds of stuff. And, you know, kind of it's an interesting time because I always have wondered, even when I was in the DA's office, is this really the time that crime doesn't occur, which obviously we know is not true, or is it just because it is a real opportunity for the criminals out there to have at it because so many people are gone and all the, you know, bureaucratic agencies are understaffed during this time. And it does raise some interesting questions, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, for sure. And it's a bad time of year. It's a depressing time of year for a lot of people. Domestic violence spikes, all sorts of things, thefts, depression, alcohol cases, DUIs, you name it. The holidays aren't so happy for some.
This is true. This is very true. It's a really hard time. And it's even hard for those of us who, you know, are just kind of regular folks who just get inundated with the pressure and all of the other stuff around the holidays, who may not necessarily feel an exorbitant amount of pressure, you know, the rest of the time. But it does make you start to evaluate everything, and then you've got all those darn New Year's resolutions that you have to start thinking of. So it's a hard time, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you've authored several books, done a lot of TV work lately, and when you look at coverage, let's talk, say, Tiger Woods, for example. If I see another comedian making a joke about Tiger Woods, I think I'm going to go puke in the corner. And for those of you that are listening, get that image out of your head right away. You won't sleep tonight. There's a serious situation behind that. It's a domestic situation, alleged infidelity, or hell, I'll even take that away because there's so much of it coming out, and even he's acknowledged it. But yet the media, for whatever reason, seems to want to make a joke of it. High profile, yes. But to steal a term from Fox News, there needs to be more fair and balanced reporting. Sure, talk about Tiger, laugh about it a little bit, but then talk about the epidemic of domestic violence and here's some prevention tips or here's some safety tips for you. Or am I just blowing hot air here?
You know, I'm kind of torn, actually, on that question because I'm sure, and you know, in your experience in law enforcement, I know in my experience in the world of crime, both as a prosecutor and now not as a prosecutor, you have to kind of keep some levity in the air, or otherwise you just, you know, either slit your wrist, jump off a bridge, or cry all the time.
True.
So sometimes when we see these, you know, train wrecks of people and situations that come out, I think that, you know, there are some teaching lessons, but some of the teaching lessons in this case seem to be the obvious.
Uh-huh.
So what else can we do but kind of laugh about it? Not that I don't necessarily think the ad nauseum jokes and the ad nauseum coverage is necessarily appropriate, but I don't know that I think that humor is inappropriate here.
Right.
Because it, to me, I mean, this is like, you know, basic skill, life skills and social responsibility 101. And frankly, this, to me, his issue is an issue of such kind of so surrounding at those in the celebrity world that it doesn't really, I mean, even though the same issues are present ourselves in regular family lives and amongst many people, I mean, many people deal with infidelity and deal with potentially violence in relationships and so forth. But this is someone who thinks that the regular rules of morals don't apply to him. And so to me, that's just not something that the rest of us deal with. I think that the rest of us do think that the rules apply to us. We hide and try to not necessarily follow them all the time. But I think that this guy just really feels that, somehow he, the state of the world didn't matter, doesn't apply to him, frankly.
No, I agree with you, and you have to keep some levity in it, and I don't have a problem with that, make jokes about it, talk about it. But then on the other hand, here we had a domestic violence situation, the NFL player that is in the back of a truck and ends up dying, and we saw very little coverage about that. It touched on it a little bit, but we certainly don't get nonstop like Tiger coverage, and maybe it's just me and I'm cranky at this time of year, I'm not sure, but you are right. When you're in this line of work, whether you're even just doing the media or talking about it, dealing with depression and sad stories all the time, you got to make light of it sometimes. Some people will say cops can be the most callous people because they're standing around a horrific traffic accident scene and some of them are standing there laughing. Well, they're not laughing at the scene. They're laughing at maybe a joke one of their buddies told them. They have their cop suit on and they're trying to step away, I guess, from the tragedy, because if you're right, if you don't let it go, you're just going to become a bloody mess.
Right. And actually, another situation that just came up, and my husband and I were talking about this in conversation yesterday, and this has to deal with kind of some of the laws as well. I had a case that I'm dealing with where there was a sexual assault here, dealing with a teacher sexual assault case. And the sexual assault ended up not culminating in any physical touching, but yet there was a lot of sexually inappropriate behavior. And when I was counseling the family as to the potential charges that may end up being filed on this case, because of the victim of, is 17 years old, and while some of the acts, there was masturbation in front of her, and while there was lewd comments and so forth and all this other stuff, really the crux of the crime will give the prosecutors the chance to either file a misdemeanor or a felony, and if there are no other victims other than her, they're likely to file a misdemeanor. And I was saying to the parents, if he only had touched her, then we would have a felony, and you kind of not want to laugh about that, but it's like, okay, but she didn't get touched, so that's the good news.
Yep.
And it's the same thing, there was another case my husband and I were talking about as well, that I had dealt with when I was the prosecutor, where, there's a burglary case and the cops showed up too soon. And by showing up too soon, we weren't able to see the intent of what the guy was going to do on the inside. We didn't know if he was going to steal or to rape or what he was going to do. So all we could file in that case was a trespass.
Right.
And so, and same thing goes with, murder. If you have a bad shot and the person ends up alive and it's attempted murder, you're dealing with only half of the sentence that you would have had the case been a full murder. And the same act, the same gunshot, you just get a lousy aim and you get, half time, but yet the person is still alive. So you sit there and have to laugh at yourself when you think about this stuff, because otherwise you would just cry.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Robin Sachs is here with our weekly Nothing But the Sachs segment. Make sure and check out our webpage at robinsachs.com. Let's talk Roman Polanski here for a little bit. Although it's been quiet in the news and you and I have covered it several times here on the program, we're seeing reports now that the victim, and this actually isn't new, but it's starting to be reported more, is saying, let's just drop it, let's just finish it. What's that going to do to the case?
It could actually play a huge role in this case. It's, first of all, right now, just by way of catching everyone up, right now this case went to the appeals court, where there is a determination of whether or not that, based on the earlier corruption by the judges, that the original plea is even good.
Yeah.
So we first have to address that. If the original plea in the case stands, then Samantha Geithner's position is not nearly as important as if it is that the judges ruled that the original plea does not stand. If the original plea does not stand and then the case is then the plea is withdrawn, then the prosecutors will have to make the decision of, are we going to continue this fight without a plea in place? Now, as we know, part of the consideration from the district attorney's office is going to be that they have her testimony memorialized in a grand jury transcript, the laws at the time of the original case does not take into account what the victim wants to do. But the poll right now is that the laws, under the current laws in the state of California, there is actually a penal code section that states that the prosecutor's office and the courts must take into account the victim's preference. So, you know, it's kind of interesting because it's like, are we applying the laws then or are we applying the laws now? And also, are we doing what's in the victim's best interest or not in the victim's best interest? Now, the other part of the whole equation is Samantha Geithner saying, I do not want to participate or I do not wish for this case to go on, is different than her saying, I will not participate, I will not testify in this case, or I will not testify truthfully. Big, big difference.
Good point.
So there's going to be some exploration, but I think that the DA's office would be hard-pressed to force her because then this, you know, the backlash that we saw after the pro-Polanski people came out, I think you'll start seeing a pro-victim stance out there, too, saying, hey, the victim, you know, gets to say here, we focused on Polanski, and we were with you on the prosecution, but come on, the law says to protect the victim and listen to the victim, and you must.
And you know as well as I do that whatever way this is going to go, the whole Hollywood preference star treatment thing that you can't get a fair trial in Los Angeles is going to come forward. I don't know if that's because of O.J. or Robert Blake or whoever, but it's just not fair because the law has to be applied the way that it is written and interpreted, or am I wrong?
No, it does. I mean, we're not even at that stage yet. I mean, that will be the whole other thing, and that's exactly what the prosecutor's office would have to is going to factor in there too, in terms of, okay, here we have a non-cooperative victim, then we have the celebrity factor, and you know, so here you put those together, and it's pretty much a recipe for disaster. So I think what's going on behind the scenes, if I were to guess from being in that office, is this is kind of throw it up in the air and let this rise and fall on the judge's decision in this case. If the judge rules that this original plea is not valid, I feel that the prosecutors are very likely to, fall on the sword on that and use that as the reason by which they're not going to pursue the case anymore. It's a nice, easy way to blame the court and blame the original judges, blame the ethics, blame David Wells, the early prosecutor who was on HBO, blame everybody else. And I don't think anyone will be in an uproar now. If it's not, what I can also see happening is I can see that the prosecutors come together and that with the defense attorney and say, listen, you know, the one thing that Polanski does not have in his favor is that the DA's office definitely does have in their favor is that if they start from scratch and they do go forward, he is facing huge, 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 huge amounts of time in custody.
Yeah.
And so they're very likely to say, listen, let's give him credit for the time he did in Switzerland, and let's call this a night and, put this all behind us and live by the original dispo. And I think that is possible as well.
What about Michael Jackson? Here's something that we haven't heard of. You and I have talked about it on past shows. Are we waiting for the Anna Nicole Smith case to come down, or is this something that the DA's office wants to make sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed because they don't want to have a problem?
Yeah, I'm happy you brought it up because I've been recently getting calls again on, you know, what's going on with Michael Jackson and, this is a sign of the times. And, you know, let's kind of look at this in from a realistic point of view. The case hasn't gone away in any way. They're doing a thorough investigation so that they have a prosecution that is targeted, succinct, and clean. And the reason being is most of the time that you see prosecutions and filings happening very quickly is when we have a situation where we have some very dangerous criminal out there on the loose who has other lives or in jeopardy. I don't think that anybody thinks that Dr. Conrad Murray is, you know, the propofol killer and is out going to drug people in the middle of the night and start knocking people off.
Right.
And so because of that, I don't see there's no kind of public safety pressure to get the case filed and resolved. On the other hand, or in addition to that, there's the statute of limitations. They've got a ton of times, even for involuntary manslaughter. They have eight years, I believe, to be able to file the case or not. So this is not like a huge amount of time has gone by. We're talking 6 months. That's not, with forensic stuff and getting all the receipts and the paper trails and following the money and following the drugs and following all the people.
And more importantly, while the DA's office may have a nice solid case against Dr. Murray, you know, which may or may not be the case, there are lots and lots of other people that are involved in this case, just like in the Anna Nicole Smith case, that they're going to want to link together in one trial. It would be expensive. It would be difficult to prosecute each one of them separately if there are other doctors or other people involved. So the time that they're spending is kind of connecting all the people together. So, and yes, do I think that they're looking at the Anna Nicole Smith? Why not? It's right there. It's right in current time. The preliminary hearing just happened. It's an opportunity to see what the courts were going to do, what the defense is going to be, and see how the case is going to roll. So it is an opportunity to evaluate the success of future cases. Well,
I couldn't agree more. Now, you and I will talk about this more on our next show, but just in our last couple of minutes here, your thoughts on what you consider the most talked about case or the most talked about story in 2009?
Well, from a criminal point of view, I mean, first of all, Michael Jackson, how can I say anything other than Michael Jackson when it was, 2009's most Googled words, So, of course, Michael Jackson was a huge case, his death spurred a lot of discussion, at least in terms of the case. In terms of like the real crime, like the true crime that you and I talk about, the non-celebrity crime, I think that Casey Anthony obviously was a huge case in 2009. I think the breaking of the J.C. Tugard case was probably one of the most successful recoveries that we've seen in 2009, and the Philip Garrido case, even though it was long overdue and there was a lot of injustice, I think that it's probably one of the most significant cases for missing children in our lifetime. The most probably underreported case that I think has probably some of the best significance in terms of the future of cases is the Shayna Davis case, where, the 5-year-old girl who was her mother was charged for human trafficking in North Carolina, and she was found dead after her mom had sold her daughter to prostitution. And I think that's a really significant case, even though people don't recognize it yet, because I really believe that in 2010, we are going to see human trafficking take off in terms of public education, public awareness. Hillary Rodham Clinton made one of her goals to really make a huge dent and impact, not just in international human trafficking, but in domestic sales of children, of people for sex and other services and goods. And I think that the North Carolina prosecutors and detectives and law enforcement, everyone in that case should be, get a big applause for filing and using the laws that were available. And I think this case could change some of the ways that human trafficking are perceived and understood.
Absolutely. Lots more to talk about on the human trafficking front for sure. Anyway, Robin, thank you, and we'll see you again next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Robin Sachs with our weekly Nothing But the Sachs segment. That's it. That's tonight's show. I hope you all enjoyed it. Make sure to check out our webpage at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com, and we'll see you again real soon here on the Dana Pretzer Show.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.